Here we go. We're on Bav Beis Amud Beis, about 12 lines from the bottom. We just explained the last part of the Braisa, that we said there are certain people who are added on later on to be prohibited, to be disqualified as witnesses and judges. There was the Mishnah had an original list, and then the Braisa added on a few more. And we have gone through the Gemara saying, well, why were they not originally on the list, and why were they added on later on? So now we're talking about that last category of Roim, of herders. Herders. Why were herders, those who are shepherds, whatever, why were they added on later as disqualified as witnesses? Why in the beginning did we accept them, and why only later did we disqualify them? So Roim, shepherds, Me'ikara, originally, what did the rabbis think? Sover, they said, Akroi ba'amahu, it's only an occasional thing. In other words, grazing your flocks in someone else's field that doesn't belong to you was not a common thing. And since it was occasional, it's unintentional, no reason to disqualify people. In other words, what they felt was, it wasn't like people, lahachas, were purposely leading their flocks into other people's fields, and but rather, you know, it would happen from time to time. It wasn't such a big deal that the shepherd industry had a bad name. But as time passed, but since when the rabbis observed that they were intentionally and sending their animals into other people's fields, then Gozra, one of the rabbis, decreed against them when they saw how severe that sin was. Okay, now we're going on to the next items that were added onto the list of disqualified people, and that is Hagaboyim, the tax collectors, Vahamuchsim, and we call it, here the English calls it the customs collectors. Okay, so we'll see what is going on, why, again, originally they didn't think it was a problem, and then later they thought it was, they find it was a problem, and then we have interesting stories about different Jewish collectors. Me'ikara, originally, the reason why we did not decree, Sover, the rabbis thought, my dekatz lahu kol shakli. They thought, well, listen, these guys, they collect from the citizens only what they were assessed. So there's something wrong with that. Okay? In other words, they took a fair amount of tax. Look at the commentary. If the collector takes only what he's entitled to, his profession is perfectly legal, and there's no robbery involved in it. This is based on the principle of Dina de Machusa Dina. The law of the land is binding. All right? So you work for the IRS. Okay, so what's wrong with working for the IRS? You're collecting money, people not paying. That's okay, because in the beginning, people were honest. That's why they didn't do anything. All right? But Kivan de Chazu, but then the rabbis law, and they noticed as time passed, the Koshakli Yisera, they were taking more than the assessed amounts. Then Paslilu, they disqualified them. All right, so now let's take a look over here. As the commentary says, our text gives overcharging as the reason for the disqualification of both tax collectors and custom collectors. Okay, so in other words, the government says you take so much, and these guys were now doing what you do in government today, as everybody does. You just take a little bit more, right? And then and then they saw there were ganavim from people. That's out and out thievery, so therefore they were disqualified. All right. Now, the Gemara is going to move a little bit further into what's the disqualification of those shepherds. Amarava, Roa Sha'amru, when we said there's a category of a roa of a shepherd, that is pasul, Echad Roa Behema, it's the same, regardless if he is a shepherd of a Behema Daka, of a small animal, that's usually like sheep and stuff like that, that's called a smaller type of animal. Echad Roa Behema Gasa, or doesn't matter if he's attending to larger animals like cows, horses, and things like that. That doesn't make any difference. That's what we said the law was. That's Rava's statement. Gemara now is going to question that. V'chi Amar Rava Hachi, could indeed Rava have said this? We see somewhere else. V'amar Rava, Rava says, Roa Behema Daka, Be'eretz Yisrael Paslinan, B'chutz Ala'aretz Kasherin. We're not finished. This is the first sentence. He's saying those who herd small animals, if they do it in Eretz Yisrael, that disqualifies them from testifying. If they do it outside of Eretz Yisrael, they're still eligible. Second half of the statement. Roa behema gasa. But if you herd large animals, afilu Eretz Yisrael k'sherim. Even Eretz Yisrael, they are not disqualified. So it comes out, what was Rava saying? It doesn't matter. Whatever shepherd he is, he's disqualified. Rava clearly says, well, big animals, you're not disqualified at all. And small animals, only in Eretz Yisrael, you are disqualified. Let's understand why in Eretz Yisrael are you disqualified. Bel mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, settling the land of Israel. Because of that, the rabbis enacted certain decrees to ensure that the normal settlement land not be disturbed. One such decree forbids the raising of sheep and goats near settled areas there, since they may graze in strange fields. But even there, Rava states that only shepherds were disqualified, not cowherds. Then how can he state that cowherds were included in the Bryce's disqualification? That's the question. He's including all people watching animals. We see that he really only held it for shepherds, but not cowherds. I love that name. So Gemara answers, the difference is as follows. Hahu b'mi gadlim itmar. That ruling was stated only regarding those who raise animals. Okay, and the raising, where's the rate when done? You raise them in the stables. Okay, but regarding pasturing, which is done in open fields, then even cowards were disqualified. In other words, when Rava said that they were disqualified, that's when you pasture them. When you pasture them, they're going out into the open, and then they're going into other people's fields. So that's what he was saying. It doesn't matter who you are. You're disqualified. That's if you're doing, if you focus on that aspect of pasturing. But if you're just rearing them, in other words, on the farm, in the stables, well, then that's not a problem. But we have to see it. Even so, why is there a psul by in Eretz Yisrael with the sheep? Let's see the notes. When one raises animals at home, he's able to exercise a greater degree of control over them. Nevertheless, those who raise sheep or goats at home in the land of Israel are disqualified. Why? Since it's common for these animals to escape their confines and make their way into strange fields. Large animals, however, cannot easily escape the stable and can be effectively watched. Therefore, people who raise them even in the land of Israel are not disqualified. This explains Rava's independent ruling. However, the Bryce, however, that Rava was qualifying, discussed people who graze animals in open fields. There, even large animals are likely to wander off into privately owned fields. Therefore, Rava ruled the Bryce's disqualification for herds applies to both shepherds and cowards. So, okay, there's the difference. If they're openly going out, then they're going to be eating other people's fields. Doesn't matter what kind of shepherd you are, a cowherder, you're disqualified. When you're raising them inside your home, only sheep who can tend to escape and therefore cause problems in Eretz Yisrael, we disqualify them. And now the Gemara is going to give a support to that answer and say that answer makes a lot of sense. Hachinam and Mistrabla, this is also logical. Midiktani, we go back to the Mishnah earlier where it talks about a guy who says, I'll accept believable to me even though they're not normally believed. Remember it said, Minemoni Malai Shlosha Roy Bakar. Remember we discussed the Machlokas, Rav Meir and the Chachamim. What if the guy says, really, they're not allowed to be judges or witnesses, but I will trust, it will be acceptable for me, what? Three cattle herders. All right? Now, obviously, he's talking in a case where they're normally eligible, and I'm going to say they're eligible. My love, wasn't that Mishnah speaking about Le'edus? Wasn't talking about testimony? That the litigant decides to accept them, but had he not accepted them, what would be the law? That they'd be disqualified to testify, right? So we're assuming now, the assumption is that Mishnah is talking about regarding witnesses. And now you're saying, see, they are normally disqualified. That's the point. Rava was saying, it doesn't matter if you're a shepherd herder or a cow herder, we don't believe them, right? And we're bringing a proof from this Mishnah where the guy says, I will believe for me these three shepherd herders. Mashma, if I wouldn't have accepted them, they'd be disqualified. And aren't we talking about witnesses? Isn't that the case if they were witnesses? And if it's witnesses, and that's what we're talking about over here, witnesses, that should be a proof. Gemara says, no, not necessarily. You don't have to learn the Mishnah that way. Lo, Ladina, no. Maybe we're talking, accepting them for adjudication as judges, not witnesses, where those people are certainly unqualified. Okay? In other words, there's a difference between judges and witnesses, and there's different reasons why we would disqualify. We're talking now, basically, our sugya is talking about witnesses. Are they believed as witnesses? That's what our whole sugya is talking about. The Bryce is talking about witnesses. Are they believed as witnesses? But now, the Mishnah can very well be talking about a case of judges. Now, judges, there's an issue besides honesty. There has to be another issue, which is knowledge. So maybe the reason why the shepherders the cow shepherds are not accepted in that Mishnah is we're speaking about judges. And as judges, the real reason they're not normally accepted is because they're unlearned. Mm-hmm. Right? So even if they wouldn't be disqualified as witnesses, they could be disqualified as judges. So it could very well, so it's not a proof to Rav. We're not proving Rav wrong. We might say, well, it's a proof, because you see, the cowherders are normally not accepted as witnesses, only if he allows it. No, we're saying there the cowherders, we're speaking about judges. And as judges, there's a problem because they're unlearned. But there's no proof from there that as witnesses they're not allowed, because maybe that's not a problem. And now he's going to bring a proof that that is exactly not a proof. Okay, that there is no proof from that Mishnah. Deikanam, we can also infer from this, if you look clearly at the wording of that Mishnah. Diktani, the Mishnah said, Shlosha roe bakar. It says three cattle herders. Now, that's why it makes sense we're talking about judges. But if we're talking about witnesses, how many witnesses do you need to adjudicate? Two. So what are you mentioning? Three, four? Why say, you know, your three cow herders are acceptable to me? Oh, we don't need three witnesses. We need three judges. We need three, four. Velamai. But wait a minute. War is not done. Well, maybe, wait. So you insist now that Mishnah is talking about judges, eh? Wait a minute. So Ella, what you want to say? No, it's judges. Velamai. What do you want to say, Ladin? We're talking about we're accepting them for adjudication. We're accepting them as judges. Well, wait a minute. Why do you have to say, if it's for judges, my ear yeshlosha roe bucker? Why does he talk about three cattle herders specifically? How about kol bei tlasa de lo gamri dinanami? Why didn't the Mishnah just say three men who have not studied law? Why do you have to pick on the profession? Just say three ignoramuses. So the Gemara answers, Hachikamer. This is what the Mishnah wanted to say when it said specifically cattle herders. It meant, Afilu hani delo shchichi b'yishuv. There's a second negative. You're right, there's a question of being unlearned, but there's a second negative. What's the second negative? That cattle herders, they're not usually found in where people live. Like, where do the farmers live? Especially a cattle herder. Far away. So therefore, and they're not used to dealing with people. See, there's two aspects of being a judge. One aspect is you got to know the law. But there's another aspect we call the fifth section of the Shulchan Aruch. It's only four, but there's a fifth. It's called common sense. Part of having common sense, you got to live with people. You know, you could study in Shiva all day long, you know, and know all the law in theory, but in practice, you know, There's other aspects. You know, when a judge renders a ruling, he just doesn't say, okay, let me look in the books. And the books say, okay, you got to pay. But then there's another aspect of shalom, making peace, dealing with people, knowing how people react to certain situations. Well, if you stay alone in your farm and you just talk to your cows all day long, you don't interact with people, you're not attuned to the sensitivity of people.
You cope with
them. Which is part of rendering a judgment. It's not just the base law, but it's the effect it will have on people. And sometimes when it's a very close case, there's other factors that we'll call them soft factors. Right? So therefore, if I don't even know when you're dealing with people all the time and you understand feelings, emotions, expectations, and things like that. So that's what he's saying. Cattle herders usually live far from settlements and were thus not exposed to dealings between people. Accordingly, they lack knowledge of even the practical law learned by most people arrived through their everyday affairs. Nevertheless, the Mishnah teaches that according to the sages, once living in seventh, the judges may retract. So, in other words, we're speaking about judges. If it's judges, why do they have to pick cattle herders? It could be any three people who are unlearned. We're saying not only are they unlearned, but they're uncouth, as it were. So even with a double negative, it's still, if he wants to have them, he can have them.
Question,
yeah.
These guys were appointed to the court, right?
No. Which case? The Mishnah's case?
Judges.
But the Mishnah's case, not appointed.
How do they become judges?
Two guys, let's say there are no judges are nearby. If you want to take the case to court, you got to travel 300 miles. Okay, I don't want to go 300 miles, but, so who's going to decide? Well, let's pick three guys, and they'll judge it between us. Now, they got to agree. They both have to. This whole parak has been speaking where you're picking your own court.
Where would they have the law, these guys? Just ordinary guys.
That's fine. As long as the two litigants are agreeable. The two litigants are agreeable,
yeah,
that we'll pick three guys that are commonly agreed between us. You can always do that. And when it's between two people here, the only thing the Torah wants is that two people should get along. Right? And if they say, okay, listen, whatever these three guys will pick, both of us agree. Now, even if it is a totally wrong agreement, according to Torah law, it would be wrong. But if the two litigants said, you know what, we're okay, whatever these guys say, remember, it's not a law of kosher and treif. You can't have three ignorant people tell you if a chicken's kosher or treif. I mean, that's something you need that you have to have in the exact law. But a monetary issue, as long as two litigants are okay to settle it, listen, they could sell it with a flip of a coin. Okay, you call heads or tails. Whoever wins, wins the case. Can you do that? If they both agree, you could. Because I'm willing to forego my money. So that's the same thing here. So, but that's not the. But if the guy says, listen, there's a Beis Din right here around the corner, well, I can force you to go to the Beis Din. That's a different story. All right, some more statements about shepherds. Amar Rav Yehuda. Now, remember, the Brisa said herders and tax collectors. Talked about them were not good. Now we're going to, Gemara's going to make a distinction. Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, Stam Roa. What about an ordinary herder? All right. In other words, we don't know if he's grazed animals in other people's or not. But he shows you his card. He says, "What do you do for a living?" Here's my card. I'm Yankel, professional animal herder. Okay. Now we don't know anything more about him, but we say puzzle. He's ineligible. Stam. Unless we do a little bit more investigation, we assume he's not eligible. Stam gabay, but a collector. If you don't know any more specifics. Kosher, he's eligible. Why? So says the commentary, he's disqualified only upon being discovered to have overtaxed someone. Okay? So that's what he is saying. So this is an interesting thing. So the commentaries now ask a question. If a tax collector is disqualified only when he overcharges, if that's what you're saying, why did the rabbis need to enact a special law to disqualify him? Remember he said the rabbis added tax collectors? It would seem that he commits outright robbery and is disqualified biblically. What if we have to wait till we have information on him, then he's already, I don't need any rabbis to do that. Tosa explained that indeed he is biblically disqualified. The rabbis added, though, that even where he apparently repents and refunds the overtax, he still remains ineligible because as long as he retains his position, he's suspect of reverting to his evil ways. That's what he's saying. Moreover, it is nearly impossible for him to return all the extorted money, provided he doesn't recall all individuals he overtaxed. His repentance is thus perforce flawed. Okay. Now, the Gemara does not explain why the rabbis distinguish between herdsmen and tax collectors. So you're saying both the tshuva, why one is okay, one isn't, doesn't get into that. Yadrima suggests that it's because herders work out in the fields, far from the public eye. Since it's impossible to monitor their suspicious activities, the rabbis disqualified them. Tax collectors, on the other hand, can generally not commit injustice without being discovered. Since there's been no public outcry concerning them, we can assume that they are honest. That's the point. That's the difference. Okay, fine. Now we can get to some stories. Avuah Rav Zera Oved Gabayusa Tleis Hashnin. Rav Zera's father was a tax collector for 13 years. So obviously, this was not a naturally hideous profession. Okay? His father was tackling for 13 years. Fine. Ki hava osi reish nar lamasa. When the district chief would come to town to assess it for taxes. Okay, literally, it means, reish nahar means the head of the river. But obviously, you know, rivers are, cities were by rivers. So anyway, he's the reish nahar, the chief of the district, would come lamasa to the city. Okay, when he would come, ki hava chazi rabbanon. Ah, so now, if Rab Zera's father, remember he was the tax collector, right? He would see rabbis in the streets. Well, let's get the story here. There's the overseer, the commis, whatever, the governor. When the governor would come to town, and the governor is the one who this Rabbi Zera's father had to give the taxes to, his collector. You got that? So whenever he knew that the governor was coming, now he sees Jews in the street. There's a bunch of rabbis in the street. So the rabbi with the tax collector would come to the rabbis before the governor came, and Amar Laho, he'd say to the rabbis, Lech Ami, go my people, Bobacharecha, go into your rooms. Okay, now what's going on? Let me explain. The governor would come from time to time, and he would levy a tax on the city. Now, you can only levy a tax on the city based on how many people live in the city. Right? Whatever, they had a formula. Every person in the city pays a tax of X amount of dollars. Now, they weren't as formal as we have for the government, where there's a census form, you have to fill it out, everything's registered. You know, like, the government knows everything about you, even if you don't say anything. Like, everybody knows, the government knows how many people are in Toronto, basically. Okay, maybe excluding illegal immigration. But they know. But in those days, how did the government know how many people are in this city? Very simple. He'd go and take a look. He'd take a look. Wow, like he'd come on a market day, right? Whoa, there's 500 people in the market. So now what would happen? And let's say he says we charge $1,000 a year per person. We estimate there's 500 people. He tells the tax collector, okay, your job is to collect $500,000. That's what we levy on the city for this year. And whatever, maybe throw in, you know, a little money that has to pay the tax collector, you know, or we pay the tax collector, whatever. But they levy the overall tax on the city based on how many residents they thought were in the city. So now how could we get the Jews to pay less taxes? Make it look like less people were living there. So he told the rabbis, who he knew the rabbis for sure didn't have money to pay taxes. He said, make yourself scarce. The governor's coming. Just stay in your house today. Tomorrow, stay in your house. Don't come out. The tax collector doesn't look at, well, how much square footage is the city. Didn't do it on that. Didn't do it on how many. Just how many people were there. He'd spend the day going around and trying to click off how many people he felt were in the city. So he says to the rabbis, make yourself scarce.
There's that many rabbis that it influences the size of the entire
Well, city. Maybe there are a lot of scholars. Or it could be the citizens, but it said Rabbanon, right? So to the scholars, so this, we'll see, he's not finished. We're not finished. He does it for the whole city, but everyone, he said different lines. So the scholars, didn't it sound a little bit poetic how he said? He said, Lech Ami Babachadarecha. That's a pasuk from the Navi. That's a pasuk in Isaiah. Go, my people, enter your rooms and close your doors behind you. Hide for a moment till anger passes. He just quoted a pasuk. To a rabbi, you can quote a pasuk and they understand what's going on. But he's not done, Tony. Don't worry. When he'd see the commoners, he couldn't quote them a pasuk because they don't even know Hebrew, maybe. They don't even know a pasuk. Amr, he said, grub, say it straight out. Reish Nahara Aslamaisa, the district chief's coming to town. He'd say it straight to them, no poetry. Okay. Veha'idna, he's not finished talking to them. Veha'idna, and today, Nochis Abba Lafum Bra, Uvra Lafum Abba. He will slaughter the father in the presence of the son, and the son in the presence of the father. What does that mean? It means he's going to extort a high tax. Okay. In other words, he kept his warning to the common people more cryptic, less. He didn't really say what's going to happen. It's kind of funny. He says, well, the head of this is coming, and he's going to slaughter father in front of son in front of father. Eh? What does that mean? But what he means to say, and people chapped, he's going to come and extort us. So why didn't he just say it straight out? Why? Because afraid, what if a bad guy would listen? A guy who would be a telltale? You know, imagine if he said straight out to you, oh, the guy's coming, make yourself scarce. So we don't pay so much tax. Now what if a not nice guy heard it? He's going to go right to the district officer and say, you know, this guy's not good for you. So he just said poetry. Even to the rabbis, he just said, oh, let me tell you a verse in Isaiah. Okay, harmless, right? The other people say, well, it's coming, you know, it's going to, the father's going to slaughter the son, so he's going to slaughter the father. Well, he ain't talking about taxes, right? So he spoke in ways that were not overt, okay? This way, everyone knew, let's clear out. Next page, Chaf Vav Amid Alf, 26a. So now when people heard this, Umiganzu, they'd go into hiding, Kuliyam, everyone into hiding. So now when the district would come, Kiyasi, now the district would come, and he want a lot of tax. So Amar Reb Zera says, what do you want? It's a ghost town. There used to be a lot of you in there. It's a ghost town. And he'd say, Miman Navoi, from who do you want the money? Do you see anybody here? Right? So that, and therefore he was able to get them to pay very low taxes. I mean, obviously there wasn't nobody there, but it was a very small amount of people. So the tax then was spread over all the people. It was very manageable to pay. So you see that this is a case where a Jewish tax collector, certainly we would not say he was disqualified from being a witness. Adarabi, you try your best to help Jews. So now what happened? Kinecha Nafshei. So now when Reb Zera's father, who had been the tax collector for 13 years, now was sick and dying, Amarle, he said to those around him, I want to make sure that I haven't done anything wrong. Shakolu, take Klesar, 13, Mo'e, that's a Mo', that's a unit of money. Did Sairili Bisidani, that I've wrapped in my handkerchief, been there for a while, for Hagul Apanya, and return it to so and so. Why? Because it once happened the following, Dishkaltin Hu Mine, because I took them from him, those 13 coins. By the end of the day, I didn't need them. What happened? Here's the story. Once the governor had assessed the townspeople a certain amount of in taxes, Rezair's father collected the tax from all, but from one individual whom he somehow overlooked. Okay? And therefore, and submitted the money collected to the governor. In other words, the governor came, he gave all this money. There was one guy he didn't get to, right? And he overlooked. Subsequently, but when the governor left, he collected the money from the remaining taxpayer. Still, you have to pay the governor. But when he attempted to remit it, by then the governor already left town, or maybe didn't take it. So legally, the money belonged to the taxpayer. But, however, no one would have known had Reb Meir's father pocketed. In other words, he had the money. Maybe it just happened a couple days ago, right? He asked for the money. He thought the extra money he'd give it to the governor. And for whatever reason, he couldn't get it to the governor. So before he died, he wanted to make sure that all debts were repaid, and he gave him the money back to him. So in other words, it's just a Gemara is giving an example. Don't think that all people who are tax collectors were terrible guys. They're tax collectors who are good guys. And therefore, we don't assume a stam tax collector, we don't assume is a Russia, unless we know. And if we know, then that's. So here is a case of somebody that we did not know. All right.
Rabbi,
yes, sir.
Rabbi, did everyone pay the same tax? I mean, didn't they have to be assessed?
No, it depends who you're talking about. No, this is the government, the secular government. If you're talking about a secular government, the secular governments would impose taxes on every Jewish city. So they would say it would be a flat rate for the city.
Yeah, right.
Like I said, they don't want to deal on the individual level. So they would estimate based on a lot of factors, and the most important was how many people were there, and then how much money the governor wanted to make on that. So he would say, the city has to pay X amount of dollars, and say, I don't care how you come up with it, but we're guessing you have 1,000 people, we're guessing everybody should pay $1,000, we want $1,000,000. Your business to collect it. So now, and this was a tax to the government. So then obviously they would assess everybody equally, I would imagine.
They wouldn't be successful at extracting from poverty-stricken people the same amount.
Okay, then maybe they would. Okay, so could be maybe they would have to vary. You know, shift. I had to figure out who could pay. I mean, normally, when you talked about local taxes within for Jewish needs, there was a whole different aspect. What about that's us to pay off the governor? Well, how about to keep the city running as Jews? You need to have a shul. You need to have a mikveh. You need to have a communal needs. So that they would tax by needs, by wealth. By wealth. For the other tax, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you have to pay by some way in that as well. Okay, good. All right, so two dots, and we've gone 30 minutes. So good place to stop. Now, tomorrow, we get into a little bit more of a trickier, not bad, but we're going to get to the other people who are disqualified, the people who sell during Shemitah and stuff like that. Okay. Go ahead.